But then as far as, you know, catching the baseball, just being an overall outfielder, I want the mentality that we're just going to absolutely catch everything. Absolute aggression to every ball and want every ball. I don't know if you can be any more efficient than that. Just absolutely want the ball. When you do have an idea or you do have a philosophy, have conviction in it and just sell out to it. If you really think that it's the right way to do something, sell out to it, have conviction in it, and go, you know, go all out with that.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
Broadcasting from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina. Welcome back or welcome to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. This is your baseball coaching source for certified audio gold and the place you come to connect with the very best baseball minds in our game. We're so thankful you're jumping on the podcast with us and joining us through this conversation. It's an opportunity to learn. It's an opportunity to grow. It's an opportunity to challenge your thoughts inside this game. And at the end of this show, we'll all walk away better because of it. It's exactly why we created this show. So again, we're so thankful that you guys are dialing into our podcast and being part of this lifelong learning community, and we're looking forward to today's show. Do us a favor, help us by following the three golden rules of podcasting: subscribe, review, and share. Make sure you're subscribed to this show on your phone, your computer, and your tablet. Leave us a review on iTunes. Always great to see that feedback and where these shows are hitting you on the other end of the call. 5-star ratings are always welcomed. And also share this podcast. Make sure you're doing the extra action step and you're reaching out through social media. You're going into text groups. You're sending some emails. You're making sure that the baseball community that you have reach upon, they know this show exists. They're listening in, and it gives you an opportunity to connect on this audio gold. Connect with us on social media. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Find us at ABCA1945. You can also head over to our website, abca.org, if you're looking for more information about what we're doing here at your baseball coaches fraternity. Please feel free to reach out to me directly on Twitter at CoachSheets3, or you can reach me directly by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at abca.org. Love getting messages from you guys. Love the emails and stuff that comes in. Got a great one from Wally Jones, a 70-year-old coach who is a lifetime member of the ABCA. That's 35-plus years inside the ABCA. Loves the podcast, loves what we're doing, and we wanted to give Wally a shout-out. He's just down the road in Sumter, South Carolina. But Wally, thanks for listening to the show. Just like many of the thousands of guys that listen to the show, thank you all. Please reach out. We'd love to hear from you. We appreciate the support. Always proud to send a shout out to our great friends over at AstroTurf, the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry. We certainly value their support of this show, and we want to make sure that if you want to learn more about what they're doing for fields and facilities around the country, head over to their website, astroturf.com. That's astroturf.com. There's a field configurator. You can generate your own field of dreams with an AstroTurf surface, your logos, and set it up the way you'd love to see it in real life. It's an awesome opportunity to see what the AstroTurf can do inside your facility. And again, we're just so thankful that we have connected with those folks and they support what we're doing here at the ABCA. So again, we encourage you to go find out for yourself what's going on over there and find out why AstroTurf has been ahead of the curve for over 50 years. With this week's show, we wanted to go back out into the outfield grass and give you guys a great show that was some content that can help you develop your outfielders, go chase down some triples, and make sure you're keeping runs off the scoreboard on the defensive end. You know, we haven't touched outfield play since episode 36, where we welcome in Darren Erstadt, head coach of Nebraska, and also Jake Boss, head coach at Michigan State, two former main stage clinicians whose presentations came with a lot of praise. Those guys did a fantastic job. So we got them on the show and talked through all aspects of outfield. We've put some distance between that. Here we are, episode 87. But we want to connect with a guy that you're going to know. If you're on social media and you scroll along through Twitter, you have seen JT McGuire, assistant coach at Lander University, share his information about outfield play. A lot of it falls under the hashtag Friday Fielders. We love those guys and what they're doing and that community that's sharing things on the defensive end. And JT has come in a way to be the passionate champion of outfield play. young inside his ABCA career, but inside this show, we go into how he has gone about developing himself as an outfield coach and how that's translated to his players. You're going to hear us dive into his overall philosophies, the staples inside what he believes are great defenders in the outfield. We uncover drills. JT is a very creative guy when it comes to how he accentuates those teaching points through practice that lead into the game. And you're going to hear us dive into a number of different topics, including recruiting, what he's looking for potential outfielders, and some of the great ideas he's got to help all of us improve in that area. It's going to be a fantastic show, another grab your pen and paper, feverish notes episode. Settle in for this one. We're going to welcome in JT McGuire, assistant coach at Lander University. He's our guest on this week's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And get ready, coaches. This great show is coming at you right now. Coaches, thanks for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. I'm excited this week to jump out into the outfield grass, and we're going to talk about redefining outfield play. We've got a really special guest on deck for you today, a guy that as a young coach out there inside the ABCA and out there in college baseball. But what I love about it, man, he is extremely passionate about developing outfielders, sharing information, and growing the baseball community. A perfect choice to jump on our podcast. We're going to connect with the assistant coach at Lander University in South Carolina, JT McGuire. JT, thanks for jumping on the call with us.
Appreciate you having me, man.
We're excited to connect with you on this. And a guy that even is in a young part of your career, man, you've really jumped inside the ABCA fold and taken a hold of what we're doing here inside the coaching fraternity in terms of your membership, in terms of convention experience. You know, we got you up on the Expo Theater stage. You jumped out on the Barnstormers tour with us. And I think that just accentuates, man, how passionate you are, what we think of you as a teacher in the game. But I want you to kind of just convey to our listeners, what's the ABCA meant to you throughout your coaching career so far?
I mean, it's been, like you said, it's been kind of crazy over the last couple of years. But thanks to you, you've kind of, you know, given me that platform to, you know, speak at the Barnstormers and speak at the Expo Theater. So, and now on the podcast. But but yeah, I mean, it's been pretty wild. As far as, you know, my experience with it, you know, I got into college baseball about 7 or 8 years ago. I was the assistant at Hartford Community College under Tom Eller, who you guys just had,
sure,
you know, with the hitting stuff. And Tom's been basically my mentor throughout my entire coaching experience. He took me to my first one in, I believe it was in Dallas, and a young coach, and I was extremely like awestruck. You know, I'm watching Tim Corbin speak. I'm watching Jack Leggett speak. I'm watching John Savage. I'm watching, you know, those guys walk in the hallways.
Sure.
You know, I was just blown away. Like, and it gives you a different perspective on how they are. And kind of from that point on, I wanted to be exactly like those guys. I watched how they walked. I watched how they talked to people, what they wore. And you know, from there, I couldn't stop coming back. So the opportunity to speak at South Carolina for the Barnstormers tour, it wasn't my first speaking engagement along those lines with outfield play, but it was definitely my first one for ABCA, and it was a great experience, a great time. I was able to bring three of my players to demonstrate, and they were pumped for it. You guys blasted that stuff out on Twitter, and they got a lot of credit for that. So that was awesome. And then as far as, you know, the Expo Theater this past winter, you know, I was, first of all, I couldn't even believe that I was asked to do it. And then secondly, you know, when I got there, I was floored by, you know, the amount of people that showed up, that wanted to listen, that wanted to talk afterwards. And it was just extremely humbling. I loved every minute of it. And in as many short words as I can put it, like, the ABCA is just the absolute best resource for college baseball coaches and guys that want to get into coaching.
Could have said it better myself, and we truly appreciate that. And again, I think when you see someone out there that we get the opportunity as an association to spotlight, and I think it really goes back to this, and I think the timing of this is perfect. It's easy to see, man, that you are separating yourself out there in the coaching community in terms of outfield play. And I think sometimes it's so easy to jump into hitting Twitter or jump into pitching Twitter. And obviously what Kai and Tuck and Gillum and Clay Cox and those guys have done for infield play, at the time, JT, there really wasn't anybody out there, you know, really being the champion for really closing the gaps in the outfield. And you seem to have taken that and really held on to it and ran with it to a point where you know, contributing on hashtag Friday Fielders, which, you know, we're huge fans of. I think it's a great platform and hashtag area to share some content. But you've really taken that, in no other words, than to a whole new level in terms of what you're seeing, what you're sharing, what you're really compiling within your team, your drills, the videos. Just explain how that whole process has really gone for you.
Yeah, I mean, Kai kind of took over the Friday Fielders a couple years ago, started it. And to me, I am a hitting guy. I don't really dive into all the hitting Twitter just because there's so many arguments that every now and then. And, mm-hmm. you know, I just have my philosophies and I have my small group of guys that I like to, you know, share ideas with and bounce ideas with back. But you're right. I mean, there was nobody that, you know, really did any outfield stuff. I mean, there was a ton of infield stuff, a lot of catching stuff.
Catching, yeah.
Yeah. And I always being an outfield type of coach that had coached really good outfielders. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to kind of do it. And, you know, I just did it for a couple different reasons of, you know, I'm not going to be a doctor. I'm not going to be a car mechanic or a police officer. Like I'm a baseball coach. And if I can give back and try and help somebody in some way, the way that, you know, I was helped at a younger age when I was a coach, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. And
sure.
I try and pump as many drills out there because there's just not that many drills out there for outfield stuff. Mm-hmm. And you just have to kind of be creative with it.
Definitely doing that. I mean, when you think about just some of the things that you're going into, some of the ideas, I love a lot of the videos in terms of the cones and the different things you're doing inside of your drill series, and then attaching pro videos to it that accentuate what you're talking about, or at least to start a debate on some of the various things that we're definitely going to dive into. I think it's outstanding, man. So I know if anybody's not following you on Twitter at JT_McGuire35, they need to, or just check out hashtag Friday Fielders and take a glance at what's being shared under that hashtag. And you mentioned Tom Eller, and you mentioned, you know, humble beginning, starting on the junior college level and then moving your way through.
Yep.
I think a great way to do this is talk about your career in baseball, but then maybe just stay at each spot and maybe take us through what are the things that you learned at each spot.
You know, growing up, I was always an outfielder. My dad was a really good outfielder growing up as well, with a really strong arm and could go after it. I remember watching his fast pitch softball games as he was older, and I that's what I wanted to be. Ended up being an outfielder / shortstop in high school. Got to the junior college level. Went to a really successful junior college program called Delaware Tech in Georgetown, Delaware. You know, they had won a national championship 2 years before I got there, so it was a good start for me. Mm-hmm. I was a little undersized, so a junior college level was good for me. Played 2 years there. I had an extra year where I needed to basically finish my associate's degree in order to go play at the next level, and that's where I met Tom Eller. I went back home. I enrolled in classes at Hartford Community College, where Tom was his second year coaching at Hartford at the time. And I basically just walked into his office and I said, "Hey, like, I'm trying to go to the next level. I need another year of school to graduate with my associate's degree. Like, can you help me?" And he said, "Show up every day to practice. Obviously you can't play in our games, but just show up every day to practice, work out. And if you don't show up, like, I know you're not serious enough and I won't help you." Mm. And I showed up every day. I worked out with the team, went to every practice, and he did everything that he possibly could to get me to the next level. And I went to a Division II school at St. Andrews down in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Where I played 2 years there, ended up finishing school and didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I got into high school coaching, where I coached at my former high school, where I graduated from, and, you know, did that for 2 years. And then an opening came up at Hartford and Tom called me. We had always kept in contact, and he just basically asked me, you know, you want to coach, and did that for 2 years, and probably one of the best experience I've ever had. You know, Tom's one of my best friends. I can call him about anything. And he taught me pretty much everything that I know about hitting, how to run things. You know, at a junior college level, it's difficult. You got a lot on your plate. And I mean, he does a hell of a job with that.
He does.
So yeah, I went from there and became a volunteer at Wofford College, under Coach Interdonato. Unbelievable experience with, you know, JJ Edwards and Coach Burke. We won a ton of games there, and stole a lot of bases. So,
yeah.
You know, got to learn the different intricacies. So, you know, from at Hartford, learned how to really teach the swing. At Wofford, really learned how to prioritize defense and prioritize the importance of base running. And then from there, you know, during those 2 years, when I was at Wofford, I was the head coach at Forest City in the Coastal Plain League. So I was able to gain experience of head coaching, where you're just learning how to run everything. So that was awesome. And then in the last year of Wofford and Forest City, Coach Burke got the head coaching job at Lander University. And from there, we've been kind of getting after it ever since.
That's it. Just rolling with the Bearcats, baby. You know, it's a really neat place to, I think, and that's why I love going through that question, because I think for any listener, it's always good to know, you know, where are you coming from on this? Because certainly we never want to speak above anybody. We never want to put out a show that the content you can't translate to the high school level or to a high school coach that a college coach feels like he can't use. And that's the beauty of really exploring that, is you really start to uncover who these guests are and you realize that, man, we're all the same guy. We just wear a different jersey. And that sets the tone for this conversation again. And for a guy to help us redefine outfield play and look at the outfielder in a different way. And certainly you're a guy that sees those guys differently than, say, an infield coach or a catching coach or a pitching coach would. So let's start with this, man. We're talking about outfield play. Give us your overall philosophy that you think governs how you work on developing your outfielders.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I would say I have, you know, 4 to 5 main pillars of what I look for, my overall philosophy, my overall identity. The number one thing, and I learned this when I was coaching at Wofford, is being ball first. You can't make a play without catching the baseball. So that's priority number one, is catching the baseball. Number two would be efficient footwork, efficient routes, and efficient angles. And I can dive into all these things. Knowledge and awareness of scenarios and situations. You know, being able to understand where to throw a ball at a certain time, where your cutoff guy is. You know, if I throw this ball here, is the back end runner going to advance? Having accurate and precise throws. To me, there's two main reasons that outfielders make errors, and that is on the ground and throwing the baseball. So we have to be extremely precise and accurate when it comes to making our throws. And then on my side of things, developing a daily and weekly practice plan is key for everything, because it can't be a cluster. Every guy needs to know exactly what your intentions are. And if you know, and if you can set your intentions, guys buy into that a lot quicker.
Okay. So as we move past this philosophy, the basic framework and where we're going to go with these outfielders, how are you approaching those first meetings? You know, those kids arrive on campus, and certainly through the recruiting process, they know how passionate you are about outfield play, but how are you taking them from meetings or laying out those pillars and those ideas, those standards that you expect from them? And then how does that look as you work into fall practice, as you work through individuals and you're really on-ramping these guys to set the tone for the spring?
I would say, as a position-specific coach, you know, them coming in, especially the new guys, those guys coming in, they know exactly what they're expecting from me as a coach, and what I expect from them. To me, I coach out of expectation. You know, I to me, they know exactly what they're going to get from me. And I expect and kind of demand the same. So, you know, those new guys, they obviously know coming in. But then as an overall whole, you know, like the meetings and stuff like that, to me, the evolution of a coach, is to try and be aware of always trying to move with times. You set certain expectations for your team. And to me, that's what I did in the past, but I've never really put it out there. So this year I'm starting a whole new way of just, I'm a big PowerPoint guy. I'm a big meeting guy. I'm just going to throw PowerPoints together, for every meeting. So, you know, different guys learn in different ways. Yeah. I was a more visual learner. So if I'm expecting these guys to do things and I'm not showing them exactly what I want, to me, I'm not teaching them in a proper way. So we'll have a ton of meetings, ton of PowerPoints, and kind of move from there. And as far as our expectations, you know, that goes from our offensive expectations to defensive expectations, all the way down to the nitty gritty of what our footwork should look like in our throwing program, to our, you know, pre-practice hitting routine. So, you know, everything is going to be out there. Everything is laid out. And I think, to me, when you set expectations, it starts to breed accountability. And when a guy sees that he's, you know, when a guy sees that someone is not doing exactly the right thing or exactly what we're expecting of them, then it may not help us win games. And if we're not going to win games, that breeds a bad culture. So, you know, I say to guys all the time, culture is not winning. Winning is a byproduct of doing the little, like, monotonous things so well and so right that you don't settle for anything less than that. And to me, when everyone is accountable and you show accountability towards one another, and the coaches aren't the dictators in that aspect, they're just the facilitators, and the players become to own it, then you'll win. So, you know, the culture is not winning. Culture is just a byproduct. And I'll send videos out to those guys, videos, pictures, articles of things that kind of support what we do. And they might not even be sports related, because what we do to me isn't normal. I embrace weird things. To me, like, the weird people are most successful. Like, think about all the normal people that there is. They're probably not that successful. So we embrace the weird and we're all about that.
I love it. That's got to be on some shirt somewhere. Embrace the weird.
Yeah.
That's awesome. How does that, and how do you take what you know, the platform that you've laid in the fall, and certainly as they're preparing for spring games, you're looking at the schedule, and as you start playing game by game by game, how are you holding those guys accountable to that? Maybe how do you handle those moments? Like, there's definitely games where, you know, great plays are made or great instances happen, and that's a teaching moment. You know, there's got to be a moment where the outfield doesn't play up to your expectation. How are you holding them accountable through the spring, but also continue to develop those guys throughout playing games?
Yeah, I would say, and I, like I said earlier, the two most common errors for outfielders to make, and they're always magnified because outfielders rarely make errors, is the ground ball and a throwing error. So, like, when that does happen, it's magnified and everybody's like, oh my God, he just missed the ground ball. Well, sure. he doesn't get that many ground balls. So, you know, in drill prep, like, it is in your face as far as we are not missing a ground ball because we are not letting this dictate a win or a loss, in the future. So ground balls are huge for us. It's, like I said, it's very in your face. It's very, like, our guys know we just don't miss ground balls. We cannot miss ground balls, and we can't throw balls airy. We have to throw them through our cuts or on a line or give our receiver a long hop. So we're putting ourselves in a good position.
You mentioned daily and weekly practice plans, and that really controlling the chaos and more often giving them a roadmap for where we're going to go today and what that's going to look like this week. So how do you approach balancing the work that you need to get done in the outfield? And if you could, as a part of that, just detail out your specific throwing program that you use with your outfielders.
Yeah, absolutely. So I try and get a weekly practice program, but that doesn't always work out. But the daily practice program is essentially, you know, and I kind of took this from Kai's book. Actually, I did take it from Kai's book. It's a collaboration of different things. So it's a structured assignment of each thing that can happen throughout a game. And, you know, basically what it is you have your dry work where we'll that's what we'll start out with, your dry work. And that's basically you do ball and glove. A lot of times it would be a ball and glove with a glove side spin or some backhand breakthroughs. Then the next one, we progress into more groundwork where we would go, you know, out of lane progressions where I'd be rolling ground balls to these guys in a controlled environment, something that can kind of, you know, pump their ego a little bit where they're catching ground balls and they're making good plays on them. And they're really honing in on their footwork. The next one is we kind of go into the air and that can be an assortment of different things. I like to do a lot of drills where I'm throwing balls at them. Flacco drills, the Z drill where it's kind of, slant patterns, lost ball drill, which is, you know, they're basically trying to find a baseball, something competitive in that nature. And then the last one would be, you're working in their throwing, and that could be in the throwing program, during practice, or that could be like, I could say to them, hey guys, today, you know, you're not going to go 100% on your long toss. We're going to go more, you know, throwing in practice. We're going to throw to bases today. We're going to throw from a ball off the wall. We're going to do stuff like that. And then with our throwing program, you know, Jagger long toss is by far the best. And I know you guys are partners with him, and I mean, he's unbelievable what those guys do.
Sure.
But it's a structure out of that. And basically what it is it's, I work off of percentages off of those guys. So everybody's not going to be the same. But a lot of times it's going to fit in that structure. So, you know, one week we might be at 80% of our peak throw, and I'll give them the opportunity to pick when they want to long toss and when they don't want to long toss. So say in a 5-day practice window, I'll give them 3 days so they can pick and choose when they want to go heavy and when they want to go light.
You know, you talked about some drills, and I love to think through how you've gotten so creative in the outfield and what you do with those guys. You know, it's almost like you're setting up a soccer practice. You lay out so many different cones, but there's ideas and there's so much creativity inside what you've done. And I think I just want you to outline, what are some of your favorite drills that you have that certainly your guys just love to jump in and be part of? But then what do you practice on, and what are maybe the focuses that you see inside these drills that certainly show up most often in the games?
I am a big drill guy. I just watch other sports. I'm not a big basketball fan, but I watch basketball stuff just because they're incredible athletes.
Sure.
But football players, you know, football games, they have very similar, football practices have very similar structures to outfield play. And then soccer practices as well. I'm really close with our soccer coaches here and kind of pick their brains a little bit about, you know, different routes that they do, you know, with passing stuff. So it's all kind of the same structure. But, you know, to me, like I have three main areas where I love to hit, and on the ground is the biggest one to me. Our progressions is what, you know, I like to call them. So basically it's in your lane, which is straight up at you, and then both out of your lane would be to the left and to your right of you. And, you know, it gets very monotonous, and it gets very, you know, through the course of the fall and the course of the, you know, the spring, it gets very mundane. But to me, it's the biggest drill for us. You know, basically what it is I'm standing in front of those guys at about 30 to 40 feet. And you can do this in any way. I choose to do it with, you know, just a roll, but sometimes I'll hit a fungo to them just because, you know, a roll is more under control. And like I said, with, you know, the effectiveness and the efficiency, like I'm trying to get the best out of these guys. So if I'm just, you know, hitting it all over the place with a fungo, it's really not making them any better.
Sure.
But I'm just trying to give them a good, precise ground ball right up at them. Working at their footwork, and then progress into a chopper. To me, the chopper is the hardest one to hit, to catch. So we'll go ground ball, chopper, a line drive right at them, and then a fly ball right at them. And then we go through that about 5 to 6 times. And then we go to our left and to our right, where we're working glove side spins. To me, the hardest play an outfielder has to make is a glove side spin. And how quickly and how effectively we can spin around, square our shoulders up to the base where we're throwing to, and get the ball out. So ground, and it's the same progression: ground ball, a chopper, a line drive, and a fly ball. And then we'll go to our right. If you're a right-handed thrower, it's going to be your a backhand or a backhand rake through. So you're doing the same thing: a ground ball, a chopper, a line drive, and then a fly ball. From there, and I just drill the crap out of those guys with that. I know they hate it. But it's something that just has to be done. And I usually do that right in the beginning of practice just so we can knock it out, but we do it with a purpose. And then I have a throw series that I really like. It's called a three throw series. And I've posted it on my Twitter before, but basically what it is each outfielder makes a throw to a base simulating a different play. It's three different throws to three different bases. And you can do it from the ground or you can do it on fly balls, but just give you an example with that. So a left fielder series one would be a long single down the line, a long single, easy double down the left field line, where if he's a right-handed thrower, it's a backhand to him. Or if he's a left-handed thrower, it's a glove side spin, and he basically gets it into second base as quickly as possible, creating a long hop or getting it in the air on a line. So we'll go through the entire time there. Then series two, will be a ball in the left center gap. He'll have a glove side spin, and this is basically simulating a first to third situation. Mm-hmm. So now he's catching that ball in the left center gap, doing a glove side spin, and going to third base with it. And then series three would just be a ball right in his lane, coming right at him. He's catching a ground ball or a fly ball, and he's throwing it home on a line with either a good carry or a long hop. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, anything in the air, Flacco's is one of my favorite, where I'm basically taking three balls and simulating a line drive, a lofty fly ball, and then a deep fly ball. Those guys tend to love that a lot just because they want to test how far I can throw it. And,
yeah.
I'm on the Jaeger long toss program for that. Just for that drill.
I've seen you in action. It's good. It's real good.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we do, you know, ATEC balls, you know, on windy days with a tennis racket. To me, that's extremely challenging. Those guys love that as well. Over the shoulder plays, I'll get out the football and throw that, throw some tennis balls to them, just to try and get them, you know, understanding that outfield play is the same as, you know, catching a football. Like you can make it fun like that. You can make it more hand-eye coordination by throwing them a tennis ball or trying to throw them a smaller ball or a softer ball where they have to really hone in on catching the ball. And it just creates, you know, athleticism. It builds competition and it's fun.
Gosh, that's great. It's a really neat place to hear you talk through that. And what I kept coming back to in my mind was for some of us and more often than not, outfielders, they get passed on to the last assistant. And, you know, the priority becomes the pitching coach, then priority becomes the hitting coach. And, you know, more often than not, one of those guys, you're going to find an infield coach or a catching coach. And it's like the last guy gets an outfield, gets the outfielders. And the tough part is you see a lot of guys just go, hey, here we go, quarterbacks. And they're just simply throwing balls right and left. And there's certainly the value in that drill. But I think to your point, I think any listener would hear this is, man, your kids don't know what's coming. And they know that when they show up to practice, you're going to give them something unique, something different. But more than that, it is going to translate back to the game. Do you see it that way?
Absolutely. I feel bad for staffs that are shorthanded or, you know, your high school coach, because obviously you don't want to do that, but sometimes that's all you have. And, you know, to me, that's why I kind of wanted to do what I wanted to do when it came to outfield play. Like I wanted to try and give those kids something that I never had. And like, I barely use a fungo. The only time I really use a fungo is to do like a soft toss type of reaction work or when we're doing pregame. To me, like if I'm just breaking out the fungo and hitting them fly balls, like I'm just doing those guys a disservice. And I don't want to do that. So that's why I'm as creative as I can get, because I want to give them some kind of experience or some kind of knowledge that they've never had before.
That's right. And you don't have to, especially when we talk, move into the next question about batting practice, you don't have to hit them as many fungo fly balls where it's not necessarily replicated on a game look, as opposed to just letting them go really attack batting practice where they're really going to go make their money, chasing balls down, understanding their routes, making those plays relative to where they'll play on the field. So I know BP is a big deal for you. I just want to, you know, get into, how do you approach that time? How do you attack batting practice? Maybe some creative ways that you guys approach it. And then also, I know that you do, and you're very versed in the analytical side of this, and I'm sure that plays a role in that. How do you use those analytics to develop your guys in the outfield?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, like I said, I love drills. Are perfect. They're great, especially for individual time, but nothing beats a true read off the bat.
That's right.
That's another reason why I don't really use a fungo, because it doesn't replicate a ball off the bat in your position. Mm-hmm. So, you know, drills, great, builds a foundation. BP is the best simulator for live reps.
That's right.
And we do a thing called power read. So essentially what it is, just say you're a center fielder. Essentially what a power read is, you may only get one ball per hitter or per round, but you're going 100% live at the same time. Say we're working on just strictly balls over our right side. And we will do that at different depths. So we have 1, 2, and 3 depths. So 1 depth would be like a lesser power guy, 2 would be an average guy, and then 3 would be a big power guy. So we'll get into different depths as well throughout batting practice. And I'll set cones out exactly where they need to be. I'll just yell out to that this round, and they'll just go to the second cone and hang out there. But essentially what it is I don't want them shagging to get balls. I want them to get a true read. And if we're going to work ball over the right shoulder and that ball is hit over to their right shoulder, they're 100% going to get that. And we'll switch it up. We'll say, hey, all right, this round we're going to go strictly left side, or we're going to go strictly ground balls, because, they're getting hit all over the place.
That's
right. It's hard to just pinpoint exactly what we want. And we track that stuff in BP, especially in the fall. It's harder to do in the spring. But we track that, where we'll have guys with charts, in different spots in the outfield, and basically track exactly, how many opportunities they had or chances, however you want to say it, how many plus plays they made, which is, anything above being routine, and how many mistakes they made, how many minus plays they made. So, just for example, like looking back to a chart on, January 18th, looking at it right now, had outfielders make 198 chances during batting practice.
Wow.
Like, that's a good bit.
Sure.
And, guys, I mean, we do hit a lot, but, guys say, like, well, I can't make my outfielders any better. Well, there was 198 chances for our guys to get better that day.
Wow.
So I'll take that any day.
That's right.
Any day. As far as like the Statcast goes and the analytics side, I'm big into analytics, especially with, base running and hitting. But I'm also more into it now with the outfield play. Everything that I do basically is the poor man's version of Statcast, because I don't have those resources.
Sure.
So I literally do everything by hand and everything by the eye test and everything by, a stopwatch and handheld charts.
Yeah.
The way that you can dive deeper into all that stuff is by gauging what kind of player it is, what kind of player that you have during BP, during games. You can make charts that, I have, like the chart that I just said, or another chart where, how many easy plays they make, how many routine plays they make, how many tough plays they make, how many highlight plays do they make, and how many misses do they have? And then that kind of gives you exactly what kind of outfielder that you have. Can this guy really go get it, or is he kind of a donkey that just stays in one spot? And then in game, you can do the same thing with it. In practice, we do, especially in the beginning, and some of my guys don't even know that I'm doing this stuff. They're just kind of like, man, why do you have a stopwatch out there right now? But, I try and gauge sprint speeds. We're fortunate. We have a really good camera system that works in our outfield. And I can video our practice and get exactly what I want as far as, how much ground they're covering, how much feet they're covering in a 1 to 3 to a 5 second span. And that helps determine on my standpoint, what kind of closing speed they have, their route efficiencies, how quickly they can time a ball, or how quickly they can get off of their drop step or attack a baseball. And then the last part of it is the catch to release times. How quick can we catch the ball under control and release that baseball? How efficient can we be with that?
Wow. Okay. Lots to unpack there. And I think where my mind just went was I kept hearing extreme ownership and you being so passionate about outfield play. I mean, you have really grabbed this and taken extreme ownership. The other part of it is extreme accountability. You've created a system and you're utilizing and maximizing a system that's allowing you to hold these guys accountable. So I'm picturing a conversation of you've got video proof that whatever your distance was, that speed was not his top speed. And now there's a conversation of we got to be better at that, because that could be a game saving play. I know it's batting practice, but we've got to be better. This is where we get better. And then the other part of it is you've gotten creative with the resources that you do have. I want to keep in for our listeners, this is a Division II program. So they're certainly not just raking in millions of dollars and figuring out how to put new technologies up. This is you getting creative, investing a little bit of your time, and again, taking extreme ownership in what's in front of you.
Yeah. I mean, with accountability, and I do this with hitting and defense, video doesn't lie in anything.
Sure.
I can tell an outfielder, hey man, your pro step is way too wide. You're swinging your leg. Your shoulders are turning. And he's like, he can't fix it. He doesn't know. Comes in for video breakdown on it. and sees exactly what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And then we can kind of figure out exactly how to fix that. But yeah, I mean, I video everything. I love having that kind of resource. And I'll just stand there out there sometimes with my cell phone and just video those guys. Hey, this is what we need to work on today. We need to work on being more efficient. And then we can break it down at another point in time.
Mm. I know I'm going to scratch an itch here. And anytime you have a guy that is on your level in terms of what you teach and what you think, and you've spent so much time going back and forth on, I think it's a great conversation piece, because I think there are a lot of coaches out there that look at the basic moves in the outfield, and more specifically, you know, fielding ground balls, where a lot of it, as we were taught coming up, was a lot of your glove foot goes down with your glove. It leads as you go field a ground ball. And then you've had a lot of pro guys really, and I think it feeds into the crow hop versus the pro step, but now the throwing foot is going to lead with the glove going to get a ground ball. So where do you stand on that? Just fielding a ground ball, then I know I really am getting into the crow hop versus the pro step. What would you add to all that?
In a nice way to put it, I'm against the crow hop. okay. I teach what I call is a pro step. I did not invent the pro step, but just watching professional baseball, trying to be a student of the game, trying to do everything that I can to be, again, more efficient. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that, you know, professional baseball players from the minor league level to the big league level, they throw a certain way. So to me, if we're going to teach a crow hop and nobody in the major leagues does a crow hop, why are we still teaching the crow hop? You know, why can't we figure out that this is not efficient anymore? Yeah. To me, the crow hop, it's outdated. It takes too long to deliver a ball. And I do, again, like I said, research on it. It takes 1.2 to 1.7 seconds on average to deliver a ball, catch the release with a crow hop. And your momentum is going up towards, you know, up instead of through and to your target.
Sure.
So, again, I teach what's called a pro step. I have two different approaches for it. I didn't invent it again. It kind of just stuck with me after watching these pro games. And basically what it is I tie it into your ground ball and your fly ball approaches. So anything I call below your waist, that's a ground ball, a chopper, even a sinking line drive or a sinking fly ball, anything that you're going to catch a ball below your waist. We go glove side, leg back, and your arm side, leg in front. And I kind of do this as I talk. So I'm literally doing this right now.
Oh yeah. I'm with you.
So basically what I'm doing is I'm setting myself up to approach this ball that's on the ground or below my waist with my glove side leg back and my arm side leg in front. Mm. As I'm catching that ball, I'm keeping my momentum through the baseball. I'm not catching it standing still in that spot and then going through my entire motions. I'm gaining my momentum through it. So as I'm catching the ball, my glove goes right up to my ear. As my glove goes right up to my ear, my glove side leg drives forward, starts to preset my shoulders towards my target. And then the pro step part of it is instead of going in front, because you're losing basically ground force by going in front. Mm-hmm. By going behind, now you're essentially becoming a running pitcher. And now you're driving off that leg. And I can gain anywhere between 8 to 12 feet of ground just by from catch time to release time. And I can do that in under a second. So any average time for a good pro step is, you know, 0.6 to 0.8. The really good ones are, you know, down in that 0.6 range. Bryce Harper does it extremely well. Carlos Gonzalez does it extremely well. So that's the below the waist approach. Above the waist would be, you know, anything, a chopper, anything that you're catching above your waist, a line drive, a fly ball, and basically I'm just flipping my footwork. So now I'm setting myself up, and my rule of thumb on this, and I'll get into all that as well, but yeah. My rule of thumb, especially if I'm trying to catch a fly ball, I don't want to be flat-footed and catch it. I want to always have momentum going through that fly ball, through that ball that's coming to me, whether it's a line drive, and I want to try and see the top of the baseball. If I can see the top of the baseball, that means I'm working through it. If I'm seeing the bottom of the baseball, it's not a good sign. Sure. That means I'm basically standing there flat-footed, just waiting for it. Again, your footwork is flipped now. So now I'm catching the ball with my glove side leg in front.
Right.
As I'm doing that, as I'm catching it, pretty much simultaneously, I'm turning my hips, turning my shoulders to square up to my target. Then I begin to pro step behind my glove side leg, and then I'm driving off. And again, I'm bringing that glove right to my ear, because, and one of my pet peeves is, you know, I see a lot of younger players, they catch up high, they bring it down low, and then they bring it back up towards their ear. I just want to try and catch right in front of my face, bring it right to my ear, and then get it going from there.
I'm imagining that you have first year guys that show up, JT, and they're you're going through your drill progression, you're going through your ground balls more specifically, and you're reinforcing the pro step, and you're teaching that, and I'm guessing that they figure it out that if I do go down with my glove foot forward with my glove, I'm adding a step to this whole process. And I'm imagining that they start to figure out, and then we're going to get right into efficiency, because you do mention that word a lot. It comes up in your language. It comes up on your tweets. You've mentioned it plenty of times here. I'm guessing that you're kind of guardrailing these guys on the highway and leading them towards more efficient moves. And I'm guessing there's a point where they go, wow, I never thought of it like that. Or, man, I never even imagined that could have. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool.
You know, kind of talking with you know, new guys coming in, it goes back to just evolving as a coach. Like, I'll just send all my new guys videos now, like in the beginning of the summer, and it's something that they can work on. By the time they get to campus, they know exactly what I'm expecting, exactly what, you know, how to do it. And then from there, it's just about fine tuning things.
Right.
But one big key with that, and I kind of failed to mention, but one big key with, you know, with that pro step is I want to try and keep my toes as tight to my heel as possible. And it goes into this efficiency part. Because if I just kick my foot out wide, it basically sways my entire body, sways my shoulders. So, you know, I've had discussions with guys that, you know, they're like, well, it's not efficient because now you're swinging your shoulders. Well, it is efficient if you have really good footwork and you're really meticulous about keeping your toes tight to your back heel. Mm-hmm. If I can do that, then everything else stays in place. So being efficient from that standpoint is crucial.
That's good. You mentioned rules of thumb, and I'm imagining you have a pocket full of rules of thumb that you break out for your guys that are certainly little teaching points, but they're more value statements. These are the things that we got to keep in mind as we move throughout all the different variances outside an outfield play. We need to be mindful of these things. You want to open up some of those?
Yeah. I mean, so obviously my biggest rule of thumb is our ground ball and fly ball approaches, which we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It's different from most people. And again, I like to use weird. It's just different. The way that, you know, I mentioned catching fly balls, being able to see the top of the baseball and not the bottom. If I can see the top of the baseball, I'm gaining ground, gaining momentum. And if, you know, if you're seeing the bottom, you're basically standing flat footed and not being able to gather any, you're basically generating momentum, tracking baseballs. One of my rules for that is, you know, you see a lot of times a ball fades or slices on that outfielder and it kind of goes over his head. A rule of thumb that I have for that is, you know, when we're going on a fly ball back, especially, I want to try and keep the baseball between my chest and home plate. And I can always redirect myself if I keep that ball between my chest and home plate. So when that ball starts to slice on me, I have to be cognitive and kind of push myself back, you know, mid route, which is tough to do, but we simulate that in practice, you know, with throws and drop steps, stuff like that. And try and keep that ball between our chest and home plate. So that's key. You know, with tracking fly balls, form running, you know, you get guys that come in, especially, you know, guys that never really played outfield, you're transforming them into outfielders. You know, a lot of them are shortstops or middle infielders, and they're trying to understand how to run after a ball. So form running is key to me. You know, driving your arms in a up and down fashion instead of side to side. To me, if you're going side to side, now you're swaying your shoulders. Once your shoulders sway, your head moves. Once your head moves, your eyes move. So obviously, that's going to be a lot tougher to catch a fly ball than it is if you're just pumping your arms. And the way that I can describe it is, you know, think about how Adrian Peterson carries a football. Like if you watch him run, his head is completely still, his shoulders are completely still, and he's just pumping his arms up and down. So what I'll literally do is I'll throw a football in one of their arms or both, and just, we'll go through drills just like that. it's embarrassing, I guess, for them sometimes, but they fix it really quickly. Trust me.
Sure.
And then, you know, running on the balls of your feet. I mean, that's one as old as time. Like, if you're running on the balls of your feet, your head's not bouncing. Yeah. Knowledge of situations. You know, we shift a lot. We shift probably more than any Division II program in the country. And they have to know exactly where they need to be. And we go over that stuff in scouting reports and before we play a weekend series and stuff like that. Understanding your throwing lanes. I mentioned it before, in your lane and out of your lane. Mm-hmm. So the way that we run our cut system is through our middle infielders. So like, say there's a ball to the plate and you're a left fielder, our shortstop is our cut guy all the way through the plate. We like to anchor our guys, our corner guys, at the bases and let our most athletic guys control the cuts. Mm-hmm. So you have to understand that if a ball is not arm's length plus a foot and a half outside, you have to get it to your shortstop right away. Like, there's no excuse for that. That's the rule. We're trying to get it in the most, you know, athletic guys' hands as possible. So that's what we're trying to do. This rule, it's called the 90-90 rule. And this is basically a ball, you know, where there's a runner on, a lead runner, and obviously the back end runner would be the hitter. So imagine yourself playing right field, and I have a video of this of Yasiel Puig actually. So imagine, you know, you're a right fielder, a ball is hit in your lane. If a ball is hit in your lane, you have to be 90% sure that you can take the shot and make the out. If you're not 90% sure, if you're 10%, if that 10% of doubt is in there, let that lead runner advance 90 feet and hold the back end runner from advancing 90 feet. So again, if I'm 90% sure on a ball in my lane, I'm going to take a shot. If it's in your lane and you're not 90% sure, or it's out of your lane and you're not 90% sure, put your pride aside, put your ego aside, let the runner advance 90 feet. That way you're preventing the back end runner from advancing 90 feet, and you're able to keep the double play in order. To me, that's one of the biggest things outfielders tend to not do. They want to have their pride and just throw a ball through. And what happens is, you know, they don't get the out at the plate, or they don't get the out at the advancing base. Mm-hmm. And then the back end runner just walks right into second base. So we're trying to keep the double play in order as often as possible. So 90-90 rule is key for us.
That's so good. Going to mental game. Cause I think I was hanging out with some coaches in my younger days as a coach, and they brought up the fact of really how, as an infielder, I never considered the mental game for an outfielder, and really how bluntly, how boring the game can get, and how you've really got to stay sharp, or the infield, and you always feel like you're a ground ball away from a play, and outfielders can kind of veg out a little bit. So I think there's definitely a something to be said for the mental game as you approach that with your outfield crew. So how do you keep those guys sharp? How do you keep them focused? How do you keep them locked in inside each game?
I did a lot of research on how long the baseball game is, and how long actual gameplay is. And to me, it was kind of staggering. So in a 3.5 to 4 hour baseball game, there's only 8 to 13 minutes of actual gameplay. And that's like when the pitcher starts to deliver to the time, you know, the catcher catches the ball, or the time, you know, we talk about speeds all the time. Like, a routine ground ball is anywhere between 4.3 to 4.7.
Right.
So like, you know, that stuff builds up over time. It's only 8 to 13 minutes of actual gameplay. So the rest of it is just complete downtime.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically what I have our outfielders do is, and everybody plays PlayStation and Xbox now, and everybody plays Madden. So that's like the easiest way to kind of get to these guys. So I say to them, all right, look, we're going to step in and out of a zone. And what that is just have an imaginary zone circle in front of you. Like, you're playing Madden and you're checking your defense and you're the middle linebacker and you're playing the zone. Like, that's the circle that you have. And you're stepping in that when the pitcher toes that rubber and he's beginning to get into his windup or beginning into a stretch. And then once the play is over, you're stepping out. You can literally talk to your left fielder, your right fielder. You can look at anybody in the stands. You can, you know, you can zone out. You can be whatever you want to be for that period of time, which is usually like 15 to 20 seconds.
That's it.
And then you have to try and lock it back in. And basically what I want to try and do is, you know, I teach left, right. So I want to start stepping into the zone with my left foot, and I want to try and get in sync with the pitch as it goes through the hitting zone with my right foot. And we practice that in any kind of drill play that we have, you know, especially with our drop steps, especially in batting practice. If we're trying to get timed up and stuff and get in sync left, right, and then go. But then as far as, you know, catching the baseball, being an overall outfielder, I want the mentality that we're just going to absolutely catch everything, absolute aggression to every ball, and want every ball. And I don't know if you can be any more, you know, efficient than that. Just absolutely want the ball.
That's it. I want to get into recruiting real quick. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we had a great recruiting episode that came out and really detailed the small college coach's perspective. So you are certainly playing on this as a Division II assistant coach. But when you're looking at outfielders and you and Coach Burke sat down, I really like this guy. What are the things that come up that you think separate that student athlete as to he's going to flourish in our system? He's got the moves. He's got whatever you're seeing, the qualities that you crave inside your recruiting class. What are those? And then again, as you're talking on this podcast to, you know, thousands of high school coaches or youth coaches, how can those guys make their players college ready to go really excel in the outfield?
First and foremost, for players, I would say being an athlete is number one. Mm-hmm. You know, we can always tame a wild horse, but we can never create a wild horse. So, you know, if we can have an athlete, and a lot of the times, you know, whether it's good, bad, a lot of college outfielders are formerly high school shortstops.
Yeah.
Or high school middle infielders. So, you know, they're already athletes. So they're kind of trying to learn a new position. If you're already an outfielder and you want to be college ready, to me, it's simple. You master your footwork. Efficiency is the buzzword, but you know, if you can be really good in, you know, you're catching your ground balls or you're catching your fly balls and then tying in your really good footwork with that, and not, you know, maybe not doing a crow hop or being quicker delivering the baseball instead of taking forever to throw that baseball. That's key. Being a student of the game, watching college baseball, watching, you know, Major League Baseball, understanding exactly what they're doing, exactly, you know, how they're doing things. Getting on a throwing program, it's crazy how many kids are not on throwing programs. Mm-hmm. But if you literally just YouTube Jagger long toss, it's there. It's mapped out. It's perfect. I think a 4-minute video of just, you know, exactly how they throw. And it's awesome. If you can get on that, you're going to flourish. And then the last one, and Darren Fenster said it perfectly, learn how to play catch. Please learn how to play catch. I could say that to every baseball player.
Right.
If you can play catch, that's the startup key for everything. So be an athlete, master your footwork, be a student, get on a throwing program and learn how to play catch. For coaches, again, it stinks for them because there's very few of them and they get put into bad positions. I was a coach in high school that, you know, it was two of us and it was extremely tough, but if you're creative and challenging with your drill work and you let your guys be athletes, you let them, you set expectations and parameters, but then you want to try and drill them in different ways and challenge them and hammer game length. To me, hammering game like reps is the key. Just don't bring out a fungo and hit it. Do game like reps and your outfielders are going to get better as opposed to just, you know, you sitting out there with a fungo and they're bored. They're bored and they just want to go home. Sure. You know, so just be creative, do things outside of the normal.
That's good. You know, I know you're early in your coaching career and I'm putting you on the spot to ask it, but I think a young perspective is a fresh perspective. And I think to ask you to offer advice that you have, maybe things that you've learned along the way that jump out to you or you know, ideas that you really hold to be true that guide you in this coaching profession, what would you offer our guys paying attention to the show?
Always have an open mind. Definitely always have an open mind to new ideas, whether they're good or bad. You can always shoot an idea down. Obviously don't want to do it publicly, but you know, there, one thing that Tom Eller told me, as I was leaving Hartford, he said, look, every opportunity that you have is an opportunity, whether it's going to be good or bad, but you can always learn from that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And to me, like, that's always stuck with me. I remember exactly the day that he said that to me. And it doesn't even have to apply to an opportunity. It can be an experience. It can be, okay, I'm going to coach this a little different than this way. But always being open to something. When you do have an idea or you do have a philosophy, have conviction in it and just, you know, sell out to it. If you really think that it's the right way to do something, sell out to it, have conviction in it, and go, you know, go all out with that.
JT, man, I can't say this enough. I'm just beyond impressed at a younger coach that's so passionate about what he's doing. I love the spirit behind sharing the information. I'm obviously a huge fan of Friday Fielders, and keep doing what you're doing, man. It's great to see someone take a facet of the game and really expand upon it and really detail it in the way that we do so often across some of the other fundamentals. So good luck to you, my man, especially as you hit the recruiting trails this summer. Hope you find some future Bearcats. Keep plugging away, man. Keep being a great part of the ABCA, and we look forward to catching up again with you soon.
Chief, I appreciate it, man. I can't thank you enough. And on behalf of every coach out there, I can't thank you for doing what you do for this sport and what the ABCA does, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, my man. Thanks so much for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast and connecting with these great coaches. If you're interested in more of these shows, check us out on iTunes, hit subscribe and dive right in, or head over to abca.org/podcast and scroll through all of our episodes. A huge thanks again to the great folks over at AstroTurf for sponsoring this podcast. If you're looking at doing any upgrades at your facility, head over to astroturf.com. That's astroturf.com, and see why they've been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years. Now, here at the American Baseball Coaches Association, we're here to serve coaches around the world. So let us know how we can help. Head over to our website, abca.org, for more information. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, at ABCA1945. You can find us on Facebook as well. And feel free to reach out to me directly at any time on Twitter, at CoachSheets3, or by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at abca.org. We'd love to hear from our loyal members and continue to find ways to keep growing the game together. As always, coaches, thank you for listening in and staying dialed into our podcast. Until next week, we ask you keep growing, you keep developing, you keep challenging yourself inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.